Welcome to HR in the Car with Miriam Duchesne and Tom Shin of Allant Workforce Solutions, where exciting HR professionals and business leaders share laughter, insider stories, and maybe even a few tears about HR in today's world. Buckle up for the best half hour of your week.
Well, Miriam, here we are again, another fantastic episode of HR in the Car in front of us. And today's guest was somebody that you and I got to hear speak at a local HR meeting for CRHRA back over at Pioneer, I believe
yep,
it was.
Pioneer.
And hearing this guest talk about learning and development and engagement and, you know, him along with a couple of the other panelists there, Susan Hollister and Paul Kelly, it was fantastic to have Kamel on, and the chance to bring him on the podcast was exciting.
Yes, I totally agree. Like when we saw him talk, he talked so much about culture and learning and development and how it all really plays into one another. So I'm really excited to have him on. And I think this is our first official learning and development person on the podcast. So that's exciting too.
We're thrilled to bring in Kamel Abdullahi from Excelsior University. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Long time fan, first time guest. I've been dying to say that. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Long time listener, first time caller.
That's awesome. No, and we obviously we've known each other for a little bit and have a lot of mutual friends, but we heard you speak at the CRHRA event back in September of 22, and we talked a lot there. And so it pointed out to us, I'm like, we have to get Kamel on the show, you know, talking about learning and development and workforce development. And you just had some great insights and such a different lens that we said, definitely got to have you on. So thanks for joining us.
So Kamel, share with us first, what is your role at the university?
So at Excelsior University, my role is, one of the things that I'll just say up front is I always hate leading with my title because I think, you know, titles can sometimes say very little. But my role is primarily around supporting the organization's organizational development and change management needs. So primarily around training, learning and development, leader and manager support, and then I think a healthy 40% is other tasks as assigned by my boss.
Oh, yeah.
<as I'm sure. laughs> So I think that's the main thrust of what I'm responsible for, just essentially supporting learning, a culture of learning and development.
Excellent. And that's with the staff and faculty of the university, not necessarily the student side of it, correct?
Correct. And I should say that there's more of a bias towards the staff side. You know, one thing that's interesting about Excelsior is we have a semi-decentralized learning and development infrastructure. So we work collaboratively, but we have another stakeholder whose primary focus is around faculty development.
Gotcha. Very good.
And how did you come into that role? Because you came into this, I remember you'd worked at Apple long ago. And how did this role develop? And I know you've been at Excelsior for, 7-8 years now. So tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a journey of fortunate incidents. As you know, I worked at Apple. The time that I left Apple, I was in retail management. And, you know, I have to tell you, it was a really rewarding and fulfilling career. But I'd always wanted to be in higher education. So the role that I joined Excelsior in was a workforce development support role. So it meant that I got to meet our students, you know, primarily working with our partners and trying to create opportunities for corporate entities to develop learning opportunities for their employees through college credentials, so to speak. And so I did that work for almost a year. I really enjoyed it. But I participated in a leadership development program, and I did this project, and the project was around learning and development. And so at the end of the project, I thought, you know what? This is fascinating stuff. I know very little about it, and I really want to learn more. And I'm wondering if there's a way to learn by being in the role. I was very fortunate that a role was made available. A role opened up. I applied. I was fortunate enough to have been offered the role, and that's where the journey began.
I love hearing how people came into where they're at right now, and it sounds like you're in a great spot and really thrive in what you do on a day-to-day basis. Is there a highlight moment that you look forward to each week as you go in, either virtually or in person, in working with the staff and working with the team there?
Yeah, I have to tell you, so one of the things that I've come to really appreciate is actually being physically with my coworkers. You know, the last 2 years, we had to sort of unlearn, you know, what it means to be in a workplace and sort of relearn a whole new way of doing things. And so as we could safely return and begin to think about hybrid and apply a hybrid work approach, I always look forward to the days when I am physically on site, you know, interacting with colleagues, because I think John Kuznia, one of your guests, said this a while ago that, you know, a lot of learning sort of happens in person and physical spaces. And, you know, I look forward to those interactions with my colleagues because then I can really truly understand where there are opportunities to better support them. But then also just to learn as much about the organization in terms of what's taking place that week. So that'll be my highlight, is being on site.
You know, one of the things that I think companies are looking at right now is ways to trim expenses, especially as we continue to be, frankly, in uncertain times. And so one of the things I always worry about in that space is a situation in which a company looks at their learning and development and goes, yeah, we're going to pause on that, or we're going to put that on the back burner because that's an expense, that's an overhead expense that we, you know, could probably live without. Talk to us about why that's not a good idea and why it's so important to include learning and development in the fabric of your culture and your organization.
You know, I think when we get to a future state where organizations exist on behalf of machines, supporting machines, and, you know, led by machines, then this conversation wouldn't matter. But I think, you know, organizations are primarily composites and conglomerates of people. And if you are a leadership stakeholder, and you're thinking about the kinds of things that enable success in your organization, you know, employee success, engagement, participation, inclusion, belonging, you know, customer retention, all of those things require, you know, constantly evaluating, you know, whether or not today's skill sets are applicable tomorrow. And I think a lot of organizations get that, but I think, you know, the issue then becomes when people are looking at sort of the broader set of priorities, it's often easy to just say, you know, we can trim back training a little bit. But I think inherently, we all sort of get the importance of training and learning and development. There's a lot of conversation and buzz around what it means to be a learning culture. We also know that in the last few years, there's been a lot of, rightfully so, talk about what it means to be in an inclusive space. And let's be frank, those things require us to sort of unlearn a lot of things and sort of re-engage with, you know, what might be, you know, new ways of looking at things and new ways of doing. I'm probably not the best evangelist in terms of advocating for this because I'm so close to the work. So it's hard not to get maybe a little bit too passionate about it. But I think, you know, the bit of advice that I would give to organizations is the attributed costs are not as great as people think. And I think you can be creative at thinking of supporting your employee learning, development, engagement initiatives without necessarily assuming that it's going to be cost prohibitive. And oh, by the way, those things are really mutually inclusive, learning and development and engagement.
Absolutely. Just so you know, there's no such thing as being too passionate about something. So I applaud you I mean, that's why we do what we do, right? If we weren't passionate about it, how boring would our lives be?
Here. I agree.
Well, it's always so fun. I've heard Kamel speak in a couple of different instances over the years, and he's one of the most engaging presenters, and I'm going to give kudos to you, Kamel, because I know I've seen you at Excelsior and elsewhere, and everyone is always almost flocking afterwards to get more time with you. I want more. I need more information. So it's a testament to how excited you are about this. And, you know, I've heard you talk about the metric side of it and so forth. It's really a testament to how much you believe in what you're doing and how you're able to carry that out. My next question really revolves around tips for organizations that are facing that struggle with where to balance this L&D conversation, and how long does it take, and what's the tipping point where they're actually feeling like they're making an impact? So I don't know if you have a story from working with the staff from when you got into this role. Where was that tipping point? What did it feel like so people can know what their success looks like?
Great. You know, it's interesting. I was talking to a colleague just earlier this week. And so you know, in 2016, when I started out in this role, we were going through an incredible amount of restructuring. And my VP, Mark Howe, the VP of HR, and a couple of us were thinking about, you know, what's the natural starting point for a good learning and development approach? You know, where do you start? Because you could start in a bunch of in different places. And, you know, Paul Kelly, whom we all know, was a part of the work. And the thinking was that to do this well, you have to start with managers. You know, they're going to give you leverage once you get them speaking the language. And it's easy to have them be partners in sort of influencing and shaping this culture. So that's where we started. Now, naturally, you know, one of the things to remember is that in a higher education setting, the notion of learning and development is often shaped by the academic process. So I remember when we started doing this work, you know, a couple of the academic stakeholders were very skeptical about this. You know, they felt that sort of this workforce development approach wasn't necessarily something that they believed in or thought would have ultimate end result, nor did they. Some of them didn't feel like they wanted to participate in that because they're academics. And recently I was talking to a colleague who's an academic stakeholder, and we're talking about how one of the tools we use around sort of self-awareness and self-development is DISC, you know, the DISC assessment. Mm-hmm. And he was talking very practically about how he uses DISC to manage his relationship with his own supervisor and his own leader. And then that's when it clicked for me, is when you hear people using the language and the theories or the frameworks that you are hopefully working collaboratively to put in place, when you start hearing that echoed back to you, then you know you've probably gotten a foothold. Mm-hmm. But I also caution people not to assume complacency when that happens. That's just people getting interested, and then the real work begins after that. One of the things that I've learned is that, you know, at the beginning, when you're starting this out, there will be missteps, there'll be resistance, there'll be trial and error, there'll be a lot of feedback, there'll be a lot of strongly expressed views. And it's important to make space for that, right? Because, you know, in as much as we might have a sense of what we want to do, it's important to realize that, you know, for this to be successful, it's got to be collaborative and it's got to be shared. So allow yourself that time and you know, give yourself the space to allow people to buy into it. So that's the first thing that I would say. And then the other thing is, in terms of how would you know that it's successful, I think be clear on what the goals of your learning and development approach are, and try to be realistic. So ultimately, you know, are you going to see, for example, you know, significant cultural shifts in a short amount of time? You probably are not going to have that. Mm-hmm. But you might begin to see things like, you know, people feeling like they're having better conversations with their managers. You might begin to see things like people are using frameworks and tools to be able to sort of manage some thorny things like conflict, and maybe even thinking about, you know, how they might communicate better. So I think, you know, work with your internal stakeholders to be clear on what's a realistic return in a realistic time frame and sort of adjust as you go. I hope that addresses the question, Miriam.
It absolutely does. And it's interesting that you said it that way, because oftentimes, and we see this even in our recruiting world, that leaders want a magic bullet and they want it to just be impactful immediately and they can check it off the list. And I mean, I'm guilty of not having any patience myself when it comes to certain things.
Never.
So I can relate to the leadership side and the understanding of why they feel that way. But I embrace the methodology and the realistic approach that people need to have to do that. But like you said, it's just like with everything, you have to have measurable goals and you have to make sure you're setting those expectations up front, and then everybody will cool their jets, so to speak, and, you know, let the process take shape and let it organically grow and evolve as the person who's doing the learning and development continues to massage it and grow it and manipulate it for the organization and the culture that's there.
Yeah, and I've also heard when that trigger point, when you hear them repeating the language that you've been discussing with them, they will tell you, I've found in my past that once you hear them touting the success, hey, I tried what you said and it worked, and it's not always going to work, but when they say it worked and they have a little bit of energy or excitement about them, then you know, okay, I've got you on the hook now. Let's continue it. Let's keep feeding this and keep taking you down this path, because they're excited now. Then they realize, oh, there's all this new information that I could put into my toolkit.
So I'm curious about that, though. When it comes to the programs and how you develop it, do you do it more as like a series? Is it, you know, I refer to stuff as like microburst training, where it's like very small nuggets of information fed over a period of time to you know, make it easier on people that are on the other side of the table. What's your philosophy, or how do you have your program structured? I'm sure it's different based on different subject matters and things like that, but tell us a little bit more about that methodology.
So Excelsior's tagline is, what you know is more important than how you learned it. And you know, the whole idea is that, you know, we learn things in different ways. So one of the things that's really important to us is that there are multiple ways to learn. And I have to credit a colleague of mine who's on the academic side, who from the very onset, talked about, you know, it's not just the content delivery that matters. Is, are you creating space for people to practice and to interact with what you are presenting in practical terms? So depending on the subject, as you noted, you know, in some instances, you know, we might take the microburst approach. One of the things that we try to do is around learning and development, that is what we call self-led. So it's something that somebody wants to acquire as a skill for their own benefit. Mm-hmm. We typically try to make that as easily accessible as possible so that at least that initial interest can be sparked. And then, you know, obviously some learning deliverables that have to be a little bit more structured. So, you know, we're clearly a higher educational institution. So, you know, we need to be able to meet accreditation standards, you know. Yep. And so in those cases, we, you know, whatever we might develop and provide is going to be a little bit more robust. I do want to sort of make a side comment here. Another thing that was really important for us, and this is something that I would offer up as well, is, and this is where the work gets, sometimes it's more mundane, but it's around providing clarity around everything. One of the things that we thought was important to do was to have, for folks, you know, a clear way of understanding what learning and development at Excelsior means. Mm-hmm. Because it could be different in another place of employment. So for us, what does it mean to go through training? What does professional development mean? What's the institution's commitment to you in terms of the time that it makes available? And all new hires who join the organization go through presentation orientation that includes that. And then the other thing is also, you know, what we try to do is to work with internal subject matter experts in a way that's comfortable for them, so that they might lead a conversation or maybe lead a learning opportunity. For example, we have a founding director for our Center for Social Justice. And, you know, Dr. Pascual Aguilar, one of the things that he's so good at is being able to create spaces for really meaningful dialogue. And that's been a great way to get people to assimilate some of the justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion frameworks that we're looking to integrate into our culture.
Love it. I find that it's important for those that practice to do themselves, meaning I want to know what you're doing for your own personal professional development, so that way you're walking the talk. And I'm curious what you're doing, and to kind of carry that model with everyone else. And, you know, it could be like playing ice hockey or taking relatives out for meals that you get to pay for, anything like that.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole other podcast. it's funny. Also, I once presented at a conference on a colleague's behalf, which, by the way, you know, I highly recommend. It's not always the best idea to present somebody else's content, but, you know, there were a lot of lessons learned during that conference. But I remember trying to lead with a joke and saying, you know, I'm here to present at a subject. And, you know, I made a joke about those who can't do teach. And as a room full of educators, I don't think they found it to be funny at all.
Oh, no.
back to the how do you practice what you preach thing. You know, I have great role models. You know, my VP, my immediate supervisor, is a lifelong learner. So we always, you know, discuss, you know, what's out there that we are interacting with that we should be perhaps engaging more with. So, you know, we always, you know, share back and forth. If there's a particular educational opportunity that we're interested in, we try to get others to be familiar with that. I'm a reader, so my learning approaches tend to be more introverted. So I try to find, you know, books or articles on topics that I'm not familiar with, and I try to engage with them that way. Podcasts are also a great way to do it. Early on in my career, in my HR career, I realized that I needed, you know, access to, you know, constantly refresh thinking. So I just made the personal investment into subscriptions into some publications. The MIT Sloan Review is a good one, especially for folks in more technical fields. And then obviously the Harvard Business Review. So yeah, mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of those. Yeah.
Me too. And I appreciate, I mean, I don't know to the extent, but I know for me, I get like a thing in my email every day, and it's like a management tip, or it's, you know, basically a relevant topic and a, you know, for me, time is of the essence, a brief reading that I can get through quickly, get the understanding and the gist of it. And oftentimes I'll share them with my team because I find them insightful. So I do love that one a lot too. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, so you get the, you know, those daily emails are great because, you know, it's funny. I don't know if that's been your experience, Miriam, but I've found that lately I might get a prompt for a tip on article, and it's just so timely because it's dealing with a subject that, you know, is probably being broadly discussed. So I've found the timing and the relevance of the articles to be very helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like your phone is listening to you.
Well,
and
that's what I was just about to say. Ears are everywhere, right?
There's that too. I like to think that it's just all of us in this world are sort of, you know, in this sort of space are kind of connected, and you know, our minds sort of think alike. That's what I tell myself.
Yeah, keep telling yourself that because that ain't it. So as we wrap up today, I first wanted to just say thank you again for joining us. This has been really insightful, and as we were talking, I was just thinking about, we really haven't had an L&D person on talking about their experiences. So I just want to thank you for sharing a little bit with us and our audience, because I think it is really helpful. But so as we leave, we like to ask everyone, what's in their roadside assistance toolkit? So you mentioned the books and the reading that you do, but is there anything else that comes to mind when we ask that question that is like your go-to to either keep you motivated or keep you on task, just, you know, helps you through getting through your the daily grind of work?
So can I answer that question in a couple of ways?
Absolutely. So the more the better. I love multiple answers.
You know, so if I answer the question the proper way, I would say that one of the things that's helpful to me is to have a couple of reality check people. So, you know, because I also, you know, one of the discoveries that I made for myself was that I needed to have people that I could process things with and through. For example, you know, talking about somebody who's just starting out in learning and development, you have the pressures to be able to create and deliver a program that's going to resonate. And at the same time, you're also looking to do it in a way that's inclusive and well-structured. So you're trying to balance time versus urgency and versus meeting organizational expectations. And all those things are great. You know, I don't ever want to cast them in a negative light, but it was helpful to me to have people that I could, who could be reality check partners, who could say, well, yes, this makes sense. Or, you know, maybe you might want to look at it in a different way. And so those are often people who've been in the field for a long time. You know, my boss is a really good person for me in that regard. And I think hopefully all of us have that relationship with our supervisors, that enables us to fully extract as much of their knowledge and guidance as possible. And then the others, of course, you know, Paul that we all know, folks that I've worked with in various capacities, people who are not even in the field, but who, you know, bring, I think, you know, hopefully a good balance for me. And I try to pick people too who have a different style of thinking from me. And some of my colleagues within my HR team, I tend to have a slight blind spot sometimes around, you know, quantitative stuff. And I know, Miriam, you're not a spreadsheet person as well. one of the people that I work with the closest with on my team is somebody who's very quantitative, and that helps quite a bit.
So it's Kamel's counsel.
Yeah. Yes, it's the counsel. Well, and you know, before you answer the second part of your question, you know, one of the things that I think is really important, and you mentioned it, is you can run by and help have somebody help you process things that is not in your industry or not in, you know, it's almost like this unbiased, clear look at something. And I find sometimes the most helpful guidance I get is when I talk to, in my circle, someone who knows nothing about my business and knows nothing about the operations of my business, but they're a business owner too. And so they face similar challenges in completely different language, so to speak. But at the end of the day, they have the better insight because they're not biased by, you know, knowing the industry, you know, what they do on a day in and out basis. So I applaud that because I completely subscribe to that same principle.
So my mother-in-law picks up our daughter on Tuesday mornings, and in the 30 minutes or so that our times overlap before I set forth to work, you know, I might just have a conversation with her about, you know, what's going on at work. And I found that I get this crisp, unique, clear perspective about things. She's not in our space, but I've always found it to be really helpful and refreshing. And so, you know, I'm thinking, you know, this year, I don't think I've ever formally thanked her for that, but you're absolutely right. You know, people who don't necessarily, who aren't immersed in our space often have a, you know, a way of looking at things that can be really beneficial to us. So thank you, mom-in-law.
Props to mom-in-law. Yeah. Look at that.
Are you going to tell her that you said that, or is she going to hear this at some point and realize?
Keep it
let's make
secret.
It a surprise. Why don't we? and the other part of it, so listen, I think we all need a guilty pleasure, right, that gets us through the day. I learned a long time ago when I worked in the crucible of retail management that I needed to find a place that, you know, had the right assortment of calorically charged things. So you know where I'm going with this. And so I would leave work on a really crazy day. I would make my way to the nearest pastry counter, and I wouldn't say anything. I'll just point at whatever it is that I wanted to have. I would buy it, and I would sit in my car in the parking lot, and I would eat it, and then I would drive home, and then I'd feel better. but I don't condone that. But I would say, you know, whatever it is that's an outlet for you, you know, for me, you know, a good cup of coffee goes a long way. I still like a good pastry if I can find one. What I've also found is the ability to just sort of think that tomorrow is another opportunity to sort of reset, you know, that has just taken me through some very hilly terrain. So I always carry my sense of optimism in my toolkit, and that in the directions of the nearest pastry shop.
Absolutely. I love it. So I'll have to ask you for some of your like best recommendations for pastry shops, because that's singing my tune, baby.
Happy to do it.
Her mouth is watering right now. You don't see it, but there's this like pile of drool.
I have to use a lot of willpower to stay away from that stuff on a regular basis.
Not always easy.
No, definitely not.
Well, Kamel, thank you so much for being with us here on HR in the Car. We appreciate your time and all your insights, and look forward to our next chat.
Look forward to it very much. It's a delight to spend time with you both. And I think this is a great thing, and I look forward to the next episode.
Thank you so much, Kamel.
I love talking with Kamel. I find his energy so infectious. And for me, when I talk to folks that are in that L&D or engagement or culture space, it's just like, oh, you're drinking the Kool-Aid and you brought some with you.
I totally agree. I really like his perspective. And it's funny you said he has like amazing energy, because he does have amazing energy, but he is calm. Mm-hmm. Like he's just that calm, soothing. Like, I just, like, could continue to talk to him all day.
Could be a radio DJ.
He really could. But, you know, I love hearing his story about starting in retail management, where, frankly, you are really exposed to so much. What a great way to start a career before you get into HR. I actually highly recommend it, because there's so many things you experience that you then can apply later on when you go into a career of HR. And that's exactly what he's done, is he's taken those past experiences and really worked with Excelsior to build out a really, really strong L&D environment for people to learn and develop in their careers and understand why not only it's important for them, but it's important for the organization as a whole.
And I love how he talked about the practice element, giving folks, you know, especially as he talked about giving the kind of step in presentation, giving people the space to practice what you're giving them, let them make some mistakes. He didn't allude to that, but it's kind of implied. But having that ability to put the thoughts to work, figure out what works in their own learning style, is something that most folks don't consider.
Absolutely. So we'll post his information on the show notes on our website related to this podcast and links to some of the things that we talked about there.
Fantastic. So come to Allant.com and read all about it, and we'll see you next time.